What's up, everyone? This is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I interview the mastermind behind CrossFit Invictus, CJ Martin. In this show, we cover competition, mindset, culture, and leadership. Whether you're an athlete, a coach, a leader of any sort, CJ has a lot of wisdom to share. If you have a question that you want answered related to health and fitness, mindset, business, etc., please don't hesitate to call in. I absolutely love being able to connect with you guys and answer your questions, or having friends of mine that are experts help me answer your questions. So if you're interested, call into the hotline at 801-449-0503. That's 801-449-0503. Hope you enjoy the show. What's up, everyone? This is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This man does not need much introduction. I'm here with CJ Martin, one of, if not the most successful CrossFit Games coach of all time, business owner, all around great guy. CJ, I don't know why it took me so long to put this together, but I'm so grateful that you made some time to do this with me, and I'm really looking forward to it, man.
Oh, excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start here. So you've been in the game as long as any coach in CrossFit. I'm wondering, what are the biggest differences in the way that you coach now versus 5 years ago, and then also 2 years ago?
Yeah. Well, I think even in the last 5 years, we've seen the evolution of the sport, make some drastic steps. And so, if we go back even further, 2007, I was at the first CrossFit Games, and it was just for fun, right? Like, there were guys like me competing, which should not be the case in a real sport. Over the last 10 years, we've seen this explode, and we've seen these guys become truly professional athletes in every respect, from the standpoint of what they're capable of, the amount of training that it takes to get to the top. And in a handful of cases, also compensation. But in the last 5 years, I would say, we've seen a lot of improvement in the abilities of athletes. And what that means for training is that you really have to hit everything. And maybe what I would consider an unfortunate side effect of that is our volume of training has also gone through the roof. And I would say that started about 5 years ago, and it probably hasn't let up much. I think this year, or maybe last, we actually, at least with regard to our athletes, we started to hit the brakes a little bit and kind of move back and dial volume back.
What made you do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, as in any sport, athletes who aren't healthy, that can't step onto the field, aren't, going to win championships. Mm-hmm. And we saw the volume over the years just getting progressively higher and the loading get progressively heavier. And you get the combination of higher intensity, higher strain on the body with heavier loading, and then increased volume. And to me, we just started seeing way too many injuries across the sport. And, I think I've always been a little more conservative, and we did a pretty good job of avoiding injury bugs with most of our athletes. But all of the markers, even within our own athletes, to see some of the nagging injuries, and then to look and see some of our, friends and competitors that were getting sidelined with, major surgeries and stuff. It was just, it got to the point where we had to kind of reel back and say, hey, is this right? Yeah, there's this overwhelming feeling like we've got to keep up with the Joneses. And, now, say you've got a advanced female and you used to think 15 unbroken muscle ups was great. Well, now we're seeing females with 20 unbroken muscle ups. So do we need to train that more? And then, also all of the clean and jerk numbers have gone up. So do we have to be spending more time with the barbell? And, we started to kind of be chasing these performance markers, but maybe sometimes to the detriment of the athlete who couldn't recover. And so I think in the last 2 years, I would say 5 years ago, we started to ramp volume. That was about the beginning of the time that I started to increase volume. And I would say 2 years ago, we started to hit the brakes a little bit and just make sure that we were, you know, remained very critical about whether or not the volume was necessary or if it was just kind of junk miles.
And do you get a lot of resistance to that pulling back from your athletes?
Yes, stated by a true coach, I could tell, because it is. And, you know, I've joked from the very beginning, back in 2010, 2011, 2010, we had a couple games athletes, Shayna Alverson and Michelle View was still competing. And, you know, we had these guys that, and when you see type A personalities, high achievers that are highly athletic, that have been involved in sport, that's exactly right, Mike, what you get is this pushback of like, I need to be doing more. And I would always joke that I was more of a recovery coach than a strength coach, that these guys would work out 8 times a day if left on their own. And it was really the coach's job to kind of pull in the reins. And you know, I've learned a ton from athletes. I always say I've learned more from athletes than I could ever teach anybody. But, you know, especially Josh Bridges, I was coaching Josh in 2011 on that run up to games. And I was going, you know, based on what I read and science and then what I experience as an athlete. But what I experience as an athlete and what Josh experiences is, you know, so night and day different that it was a poor measure, right? So there were times where I was trying to limit his volume thinking there's no way he could recover from this. Right. And he felt like he had done 20% of the work he should do in a day.
Right.
And so, you know, with I think in any good coaching relationship, we've tried to have a lot of we always say it's a dialogue. It's not me dictating training. It's a dialogue to figure out. And over the years, we've got that pushback, say, hey, I should be doing more. And there are some times where the athlete's absolutely right. And we had to adjust our programs. And that's why I would say about 5 years ago, we were like, okay, you know what? These guys are extraordinarily fit. These guys are recovering exceptionally well. We can allow volume to creep up a little bit. Let's try to add some more stuff and see how they do. And we did that. And we probably experimented with that and increasing volume. And then about 2 years ago, we probably said, look, enough's enough. And now we're going to rein it back and make sure that our athletes stay healthy for the long term.
Right. So what is the conversation you have around shiny object syndrome? Shiny object syndrome being, you know, seeing someone posting a workout on Instagram and feeling like you have to go do it that day. How do you deal with that?
Oh man, it's a great question. And it's become such a prevalent part of coaching that we have a whole section of it during our athletes camps, basically talking about how to eliminate distraction. And my good friend and one of our, kind of partners with all of our athletes, Heidi Barker, she does visualizations for our athletes when she gives a talk that's basically, you know, talks about, you know, paying attention to the grass in your yard instead of constantly looking over the fence at the neighbors and then letting your grass die because you're failing to water it and take care of it. And social media is really tough. Actually, Lauren Fisher talks at the camps about it because I think, you know, she's been somebody that's been probably the most exposed. This was a 19-year-old girl that goes to games for the first time and finishes in the top 10. And, you know, her Instagram numbers are, I don't even know, over 500,000 or whatever. And it's probably low these days. I don't even know. But, you know, she got thrust into the limelight. And in the year after, in 2015, that put so much pressure on her because she was getting all this social engagement and people were kind of chirping at her. She felt higher expectations. She was looking at other athletes' Instagrams and watching what they were doing. And what we realized is it just pulled her away from her intention and why she does this and what works well for her. And, you know, that gets really dangerous for athletes. It's really important to figure out, you know, why they're doing it and what feels good for them. And when you've constantly got those antennas out and looking in other directions, it makes it really difficult to get a good read on yourself. So from a prevention standpoint, it's just constant discussion with athletes. And anytime an athlete comes in and says, like, oh, did you see so-and-so did this today? And, you know, it's always like, hey, we got to stay in our lane. We got to keep our focus, you know, on what your development is and your timeline. And that's, you know, it's easier at times and it's harder. You know, Lauren went through a really pretty severe ankle surgery this year that I think most people don't really know the extent of, but she had a longitudinal tear of a tendon, a pretty huge tear of a tendon that went, you know, the length of the tendon and had to have a bunch of bone shaved off. And, you know, she's coming back from that and she's looking at other athletes that may have had setbacks and seeing how quickly they bounce back. And, you know, she's wanting to get geared up, but the circumstances of her injury and theirs are totally different. And it's just that constant reminder of like, hey, we've got to stay focused on what your plan is and your progression instead of worrying about where other people are at.
I love all of that, especially that the grass analogy. I think it's just so tempting. Like we all think that by worrying more or thinking more about what other people are doing, it's going to give us a leg up, right? If it's constantly on my mind, I'm constantly worrying about it, then I'm constantly going to be getting better. All of that worry really does nothing. I think the fastest way to improve is simply just to focus on exactly what you're saying, is focus on what you are doing and giving full effort on that path. So I love all of that, man.
Yeah.
So this community doesn't lack hard work at all. Everybody's working hard. Everybody's putting in hours in the gym. What do you think are the three biggest differentiators between the best and the rest?
I think I actually think what we were just talking about. I think confidence. You know, we talk about this a lot with our athletes as one of the you know, distinct differences between the most talent or the most successful athletes and those that may have even more talent but don't quite reach that level is that they have the self-confidence to trust in what they're doing, to trust in their process, to trust in the work that they're putting in, and to show up on game day knowing that they're going to be prepared. And when you lack that confidence, then it's a lot easier to get distracted by what other people are doing. It's a lot easier to get out in a workout and chase somebody and come out way too hot instead of trusting your plan and pacing and knowing how to feel your way through that. And so I would say number one for me is confidence. And athletes that lack confidence in their training and that lack confidence in themselves as whether it's their physical talent or their mental resolve, I think those guys are always prone to underperformance.
Mm-hmm. How do you guys teach that? Is it are there any staples in your program that you teach this Invictus mindset, or is it 100% on an individual basis?
Yeah, I mean, so we do have certain principles that we try to teach. I mean, you know, one of the things that we started back in, 2009 was just talking about body postures and postures of defeat and postures of success, and that, you know, you watch how athletes rest and it'll tell you a lot about their mindset at that time. You know, Josh, I would say, you know, Josh, I probably learned it from and coaching Josh. You just never saw him bent over or, you know, flopping around on the ground after a workout. And then I'd compare that to some of my other athletes and I'd be like, man, you can just see those voices that are telling you to stop or to slow down or that you're going to vomit or whatever. You can see those amplify the minute an athlete puts their hands on their knees and hangs their head down. Mm-hmm. Where I would watch Josh, you know, again, back in 2010, 2011, you know, finish a set, you know, and still have 10 reps to go or whatever and stand and just kind of stand tall and stare at the barbell and then put his hands back on it and go again. And we just realized, we're like, man, this is so important that our athletes understand what their posture does for performance. Because when you're standing up tall and your eyes are open and you can see a task at hand and you can see the competitors out of your periphery, then you're going to move when it's time to move. Mm-hmm. But you put your hands on your knees, you hang your head, you close your eyes, You're just looking for a way out. You're looking for an escape. And I think that's been, you know, an important lesson that we've tried to instill in these guys as a starter. But I would say the vast majority is individual. Every athlete comes in with a little bit different circumstance. Some come in with massive egos and confidence in themselves and then get humbled and then suffer a lack of confidence because they're not sure they can trust themselves. Mm-hmm. And we get other athletes. I mean, Matty Myers is a great example. This kid is, you know, out of this world talented, but, you know, kind of comes in with a, you know, doubting whether or not she's going to be capable. Right. And so, so then we need to put her in positions to succeed and realize like, no, you're really good at this. You're going to be just fine, kid. And so that's part of the, you know, what I call the true coaching. I mean, there's so many elements to coaching, but, I would say that's been the one that's been the most fun and fulfilling over the years is helping athletes discover a little bit more about themselves. You know, there are people that are much, much better than me with movement. And that's why we, you know, bring in a guy like Julian and ask him to look at movement mechanics and some of that stuff. But I think that development and helping athletes find, you know, how good they can be between the ears is something that I enjoy the most.
How did you first get started on that? Like what piqued your interest on the kind of psychological component and, you know, what was your development like with that?
Yeah. I think it's been just over the years growing up, I was a martial artist and, you know, in Taekwondo and competed, you know, in Pan American Games and stuff like that for Taekwondo. And for me, it's like I probably wasn't the most physically talented, and I tried to look for every edge I could. And so, you know, I was introduced to meditation visualization when I was, gosh, I don't know, 14, 15. And so I've always kind of enjoyed those concepts. I've always tried to figure out. I played baseball in college, and I was definitely the least talented guy on the team. And so I was constantly trying to figure out, like, you know, how can I be better? How can I get an edge? But then I have to give a lot of credit for this stuff to the athletes that I've worked with. And, you know, probably the most formative, just because he was a really close friend and because we started working out together in 2009, is Josh Bridges, who's also, you know, in the Navy and learned incredible lessons about mental resilience in the Navy. And so, you know, just through our discussions, and through my own personal stuff and then working with other athletes and then, Heidi Barker, who still works with us. I mean, she was a, Olympic level, swimmer, was, you know, involved with Navy SEALs, and did a lot of counseling with them and was an adventure racer. And so all of her perspectives, I just felt like I've been really blessed to have this team of people with great perspectives that have shared those with me and then, you know, helped refine how I think of things. And then we've all been able to share those things with others.
Is there anything tactical that you teach to help people prepare for game day or a big event?
Yeah, absolutely. And we go through this in our book, the Invictus Mindset book, but what you really have to do is figure out how you manage that peak anxiety state, right? We have to go into a competition with a little bit of excitement, call it anxiety, you know, same thing. And for competitors to understand who they are and how they get to that point, is really important, because we have athletes on both sides of the spectrum. You have the athlete that's bouncing off the walls before an event and that are, you know, constantly excited and they're living on this high. And the problem is for multi-day competition, and we've seen this in a lot of instances, is you'll see athletes like that that do really well on day one and maybe day two, and day three, they're just not, they don't have it left, mm-hmm. right? Because they haven't come down. And so some of the tactical tools that we teach is the meditation visualization. Heidi will prepare those for our athletes. And between events, basically we want to get them back as low as possible. We want to get their heart rate way down. We want to get them breathing calm and easy, so that we can build back to that as we approach the competitive event. But we try to get them in the habit of using those visualizations before and after every event, to really calm their bodies so that we can make it through the whole weekend kind of, you know, with peaks and valleys instead of just living on a high, until we burn out.
Mm-hmm. What does a post event visualization look like?
Yeah. So the post event may be more meditation than visualization.
Okay. Got it.
May be looking, at the, but it's kind of, you know, spending 15 minutes to just get, heart rate down. And often we'll couple that, because we're really lucky to have some great body workers, is, you know, after an event, we'll throw them on a salt bike or whatever. We'll have them just spin out for 10 or 15 minutes. They're going to be super jittery and excited, you know, hopefully excited or upset about the way their event went. Right. And so we'll give them 15 to 30 minutes to just spin some out, expend a little bit of energy, and then mentally get a little bit quiet. And then we'll throw them on a table for like really light body work, and then just having hands on them and somebody talking to them about breathing, or their headphones on with one of, you know, Heidi's like downtime meditations, just to get them breathing easy. And I mean, in your ideal world, they almost fall asleep, or actually do fall asleep on the table, because then I know that they're calm, and then we can build them back up for the next event.
How do I want to say this? What have your athletes spoken to you about, like, other effects that those tools have had on their life, this meditation, visualization, like outside of sport? And if so, what?
Yeah. I mean, definitely for some of my younger athletes, and especially young female athletes, right? It's, I mean, Lauren and Maddie are great examples, but it's getting them away from, there's so many distractions, right? There's so many, especially when you're a 19, 20 year old kid and you're in college and you've got this Instagram following and people may be saying not so nice things about you. And you've got the pressure that you feel from sponsors and all of that, that learning how to get away a little bit, learning how to create some downtime and space, you know, whether it's just that they're prepping for a final and they realize, like, man, I've been all spun up. I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. I need to spend 10 or 15 minutes, you know, getting some downtime or some quiet time and breathing, right? That ends up paying off huge dividends for those guys in, I think, every aspect of their life.
That is awesome. So I want to talk about failure, and specifically how you approach it with your athletes. I'm wondering, I have a specific instance in mind. So Lauren missed the games 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, 2015.
2015, she missed the games after placing, I believe, top 10 the year before. Yeah. At the games. Yeah. What was the immediate conversation with her like, you know, when you were still at the event? And then kind of what was the conversation going forward based on that experience?
Yeah. Yeah, so she had some circumstances, right? We thought sprained her ankle, you know, a week and a half or almost 2 weeks prior to that regionals, and was on crutches and not walking until 3 days prior to that regionals. And so, you know, in that situation, there was such clear circumstances that it just wasn't meant to be. And it wasn't an indication that she didn't put in the work or anything like that, that, you know, she was trying to overcome. And so I think our conversation was, I actually remember very distinctly, because she came off the floor of her last event and I was waiting for her, and there were two, I would say 8 to 10 year old girls, and they both had cards that they had made for Lauren. And they gave her the cards, it's funny. I mean, this was a couple of years ago, and I start to feel a little emotional about it. But they give her these cards, and I watched their interaction, and I just pulled Lauren. And I said, "Look, you came out here, and your purpose is just different. It wasn't meant to be that you went to the CrossFit Games this year. But if you look at the way you inspire others, and the way you especially inspire young girls and you know, help them to look at their dreams and achieve their dreams, even if they're not, you know, socially acceptable dreams in terms of, you know, a female lifting heavy weights. And I just reminded her that she didn't fail. She served a different purpose in 2015 by the way she inspired, by the way she went out and competed with everything she had, even after a major injury. And so that one was I think, an easier case, because it was so clear that she had done an absolutely incredible job, just in a different purpose than competition.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal lesson, man. Thank you for that. You work with a lot of young, developing athletes. Are there anything, or what are the unique challenges, opportunities that you think these young athletes need to be focused on?
Yeah, I love working with young athletes, just because I think, I should say, I love working with young athletes that are eager to learn. Mm-hmm. That I think that you have an opportunity to set, you know, the right principles and set the foundation with these guys, rather than fighting bad habits and, you know, maybe bad mindset. And so really it's those foundational emotional elements of trying to establish confidence, trying to establish, you know, focus on their process, to eliminate distractions, to understand what real progression looks like, and understand the complexity of the sport. And I say that just to give some color to that, is that I think a lot of people are naive in how long it may take to get good enough to compete at the highest level of this sport, right? So they start CrossFit in a year and they're like, I'm better than most people in my gym. I'm going to the games. And it's like, well, that's normally not the case. That the number of skills that athletes have to be proficient with, the amount of weight that they have to move, for 99% of athletes, that takes time. And if you're not already a world-class athlete, like you weren't on, you know, an Olympic trial team for a different sport, it's hard to imagine that you can just jump into this and, you know, be one of the best in the world. And so we try to help athletes kind of understand where they're at right now and what the process looks to being there. And I'll be honest, that turns a lot of athletes off, right? They'll go to other coaches or programs that, you know, might say like, oh yeah, like you're great, you're going to get there. And it's like, well, that may be good for recruiting and really bad for the long-term success and emotional health of an athlete who thinks that they're, you know, just a year away, but might actually be 3 years away. But I think from a long-term development standpoint, having an athlete understand, hey, this is what it's going to take, and we need to build these attributes first. And sometimes that may mean taking a couple steps back. You know, I enjoy that process of watching them grow and then fulfill their potential down the line.
Yeah, which is the whole take a couple steps back is even harder with that younger population. But I couldn't agree with you more, man. You have to set up the widest base possible in you know, a million different skills if you want to achieve your potential, if you will.
But I think that, you know, that taking a couple steps back, when you have a young athlete that hasn't been at the highest level, is a heck of a lot easier than when you've got a, you know, late 20s athlete that's already been to the games and says like, oh, I'm going to make a change because, you know, whatever I was doing isn't working for me. And often, you know, it has nothing to do with the program or the coach there or whatever, right? It has to do with the mindset. And then you ask that athlete to take a few steps back. Sometimes that can be an even tougher process because they're already set an expectation and habits that you're having to kind of break. And if you don't get full buy-in, that can be a really tough, tough.
Yeah. Their identity is already wrapped up in being at a certain level. So taking a couple steps back is just not acceptable to some people. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Have you noticed any So I noticed you work with a lot of young females especially. Have you noticed anything that helps you communicate with men versus women better?
I really don't. I mean, I've got, I always joke. I think that like I've basically staked my reputation on coaching female athletes, but I don't really see much difference in, you know, I mean, there's certainly differences in how I communicate, but I'm not sure I focus on the gender, because I would say that even, you know, I'm blessed to be able to work with Alex Anderson and Sam Dancer. And I would say I communicate with the two of those guys, you know, very differently also. I'm not sure it's gender as much as it is the person. It's knowing who you're working with, knowing their priorities in terms of, you know, for example, Sam, he is, you know, he's a husband and he's, you know, very, very into his faith and sharing his faith with others. And those are priorities for Sam. And he's a business owner after that. And so when we look at the Open, our conversations are, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, I've got to get these people. And then, you know, once I get my whole gyms through it, I'll attack this Open workout. Right. So planning on the coaching side, if I gave Sam, you know, every workout that I gave, you know, Alex or Garrett or, you know, any of these guys in here, dude, he'd just be like, hey, I can't do all this. You know, he'd just call it. And so the conversations with Sam have to be around who Sam is and what his priorities are. And the conversations with Alex have to be, you know, around that also. And so I think it's with these high level athletes, especially, it's like, you really got to optimize. And in order to optimize, you have to know exactly where they're at and where they're coming from, instead of just trying to overlay a blanket template or approach.
Right. Generally speaking, do you think, or do you feel like men in this sport or women in this sport are more coachable?
Yeah, I do. I mean,
what do you think that is?
It's tough, and I'm not like trying to throw anybody under the bus, but I just feel like there's less ego there. There's more willingness to accept outside help. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say, like, I'm just absolutely blessed. I think Sam and Alex, they're both guys that, you know, like obviously they're really good at what they do and they're proud of what they do, but man, they reach out. I think Sam is one of the smartest coaches in this sport,
right?
But he reaches out and he accepts advice and he tries it and he implements it. And Alex is the same way, but there are a lot of male, I mean, shoot, some of the young kids in my gym, I see every day and I'm like, hey, I want you to try this. And I watch and they don't try it. And I'm like, dude, what happened?
But, what the fuck do you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't see that nearly as much with our female athletes. Our female athletes tend to be a little more open to learning, and that's okay. You know, I think it's a process, and I never try to force that. You know, we try to educate, and when people are ready to listen and implement, then, you know, we'll always be available. But if they're not, if they want to run it on their own, then, you know, I don't have any ego about that. I'm not trying to hold them, you know, to what I want. It's like, if they want to do it on their own, it's like, all right, cool. Let me know if you need help.
Right. I think another huge factor is Rich. I mean, Rich was so dominant for so many years and, you know, for the most part, he programmed for himself. And so all of these young kids look to that, and that's, you know, that's their role model. When they don't realize how many years he put in before that, the help he was getting on the side from numerous different coaches, as well as he was a strength and conditioning coach at a major university.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, there's two just major standout points there, which is Rich Froning, you know, will probably, it's hard to imagine he won't be always in contention for the all-time best athlete in this sport. He is freakishly gifted as a physical talent, but he is also extremely bright and humble. Like I always joked, you know, back when Josh was really trying to gun for that first place, it was like, as a coach, you want to try to find something you don't like and be right, competitive. Right. But I've always just really liked Rich. He's a good dude and he's smart, man. And like you said, he has a degree and was a strength coach. Like, it's not like he's just throwing a workout up against the wall. Like, he knows what he's doing. He understands progression. He understands how his body adapts. He understands how his body recovers. So when you say that Rich programs for himself, you know, it's not what you see a lot of guys doing that are programming for themselves, which is looking at 12 different programs and doing, right, you know, five of the workouts each day. You know, Rich had a plan and he understood himself. And, you know, I think that I agree with you. I think it's a bad precedent in the sense that people didn't realize how good and how sophisticated Rich is with his training.
Right. And, you know, don't get me wrong, there's still so many people that are extremely successful in this sport at the very highest level that are doing most of, if not all of it, on their own. But, you know, I think one of the biggest risk is longevity, right? You have to have, yeah, someone in your corner to, you know, tell you to hold back in terms of injury prevention, in terms of burnout. It's just, you know, getting a coach, having someone to do that for you is like a safeguard, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I grew up in a martial arts and then boxing world. And yeah, you got to have a corner man that has the towel, because an athlete's never going to say, like, that might be enough.
Right. Who's the first person, it could be athlete, a mentor, anyone that comes to mind when I say disciplined?
Oh man, you know, recently we had the opportunity to work with, and she's an athlete that's absolutely crushing the Open right now. And maybe this is just recency bias, because I can think of a lot of people that fit that have been in my life and have been great mentors. But Rebecca Delaney is an athlete that walked into our gym on, you know, December 2015 at like 190 pounds. And she's talented, and she had been to regionals a couple of times in the past and then had, you know, gained some weight. And I've watched her over the course of last year. She did the Open with us and we put her on our team as our alternate last year. And we sat about this time last year, it was right after the Open, and she said, yeah, I'd like to be an individual athlete in the future. And I was like, wow, okay, like, you know, let's set some goals. And we set some goals. And I said, look, I said, in order to kind of earn that right to be, to say I want to be an individual and maybe not be on a team, I need to see you able to get 30 strict handstand pushups. Now, at the time, she couldn't get probably one, and she couldn't do a ring dip. Mm-hmm. And I said, and I need to see you with 15 unbroken muscle ups. And I've watched her for more than a year just work. And, you know, her body weight's way down. She's, you know, 160 or so now. And the girl's got 30 strict handstand pushups. And I think last time she tested, which was a couple months ago, she was like 12 unbroken muscle ups. And, you know, and now you see that she's, you know, second in Southern California in the Open. I mean, this woman. And so from a discipline standpoint, you know, there's two parts of discipline. There's daily, right? Like, can you wake up at the same time? Can you get your training? Like all that. But what I see athletes struggle more with than daily discipline is long-term vision and planning, right? Mm-hmm. So this was over a year ago. You know, she says, I'd kind of like to do this. I know I'm not in shape now, but in the future, I want to be an athlete. And every day, even though, you know, she was an alternate on our team, she trained with us, but, you know, she watched Maddie Myers and Megan Gonzalez and Heather Hippensteel, you know, kick her ass in every workout, right? Just like anytime gymnastics came up, you know, she was behind. And she never got discouraged. She never stopped showing up. She did everything she's needed to do on the outside of the gym in terms of her nutrition and making sure that she was getting sleep. And she's doing all this while she's going to school full time and working as a bartender. And we've just slowly seen her develop into, you know, what could be an absolute standout performance at regionals this year, you know, right next to Lauren Fisher and Maddie Myers. And that kind of discipline, I think that discipline over time, that's not just fleeting for 8 weeks or whatever. Like, we've all seen people, you know, really dedicate themselves, whether it's a nutrition challenge or training, for 8 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever. But to see her do it for over a year and just continually make progress, I think, you know, right now she's just been blowing me away.
That's incredible. What do you attribute that to? Is it just pure willpower? What is it that allows her to create that vision and then execute on it?
She is a tough kid, and she's had some life experiences and been through a lot, and she's got a survivor's fighter's mentality. And I think she's utilized that to just set the path and just know every day why she's doing this and what she's fighting for.
That's awesome, man. So it just dawned on me before we started, you were saying that y'all are gunning for sending three teams to regionals. That's never been done before. And then on top of that, you have half a dozen or more individuals that are all gunning for podium spots. So, I mean, your gym has got to be the strongest culture in the entire sport. I'm wondering, what do you do to protect that culture? And specifically, how do you deal with drama that comes up or anything that starts to take away from that culture?
Sure. Yeah, it's... Well, one, first of all, I'd say part of the success is a snowball, right? Is that when you have the ability to go and train with other great athletes and learn from other great athletes and be pushed by other great athletes, then, you know, that's why we're able to do that, is that, you know, we have guys coming in and they know that they get great training and they see the improvements in their training in a short amount of time, and it makes it easier for you know, for us to continue to get this push of great athletes coming into the gym. But I think from a cultural standpoint of how we protect that, it's really important that we set the tone within the community that we're all here for the same reason. And it doesn't matter if you are a perennial games contender or you're just starting on this. We've got a young kid, Nick Loera, who's a freshman in college, right? And this kid's going to be really good. He's not there yet, but they love the kid and they respect him and they want to push him. And as long as everybody understands that as a community, we're going to support and encourage you to achieve your goal, whether that goal is just to score in one workout in the open for a team or to win the CrossFit Games, then it makes the training environment fun, right? That you're seeing somebody get as much applause for a PR 225 pound back squat as you are a PR for a 525 pound back squat. And that makes it fun. That makes it the environment that I want to show up to coach and that the athletes want to show up to train in. And there are times that you do have to safeguard that, as in any sport. There's going to be athletes that get competitive with each other, but for the most part, they do a really good job of understanding that, you know, if they're competitive with each other in the gym, but supportive, that it just means that they all get better at the same time.
Love it, man. I have a few business related questions. So you're uber successful as a coach, as a business owner of multiple gyms, online programs, etc. So what drives you? I mean, you could stop now and you're going to be remembered for a long time as being, one of or the most successful CrossFit coach of all time. What drives you to not only keep going, but from the outside looking in, it seems that you guys are picking up speed and momentum. So what drives you?
Oh gosh, this probably isn't a good answer from a mindset standpoint, but probably fear of letting any of these guys down. Is that both from my employees and athletes? Like, I as a coach, I view you know, I look at my athletes and I look at the amount of hard work they're putting in. And I think, if I don't outwork them, like, what happens if they fail? I'm going to feel horrible. Like, I let them down and I created that situation. And so, other than saying fear letting them down, it's mutual respect. It's that I respect what they're putting in, and I want to make sure I do everything in my power to give them the same dedication and respect that they're giving me. And the exact same thing of my employees. And I would say that I never would have guessed when I opened a gym that I would be in this position. But now, you know, I want the gyms to grow and succeed for my employees, not for me. Because, you know, without sounding arrogant or condescending, if I wanted financial success just for myself, I would be much better off not owning a gym. I would be much better off just running online programs and coaching athletes, because there's no overhead. But I have the ability to employ 40 people, and they have a chance to work in an environment where they're constantly helping others and seeing them improve and living a more, you know, healthier, happier lifestyle. And that responsibility, I think, is massive. To my employees, to make sure that they can make a living wage and that they can meet their financial goals and live the life that they want to in terms of helping others. And so I look at that. I look at a guy like Tino Marini, who's my, you know, kind of head coach on athlete development, and, you know, one of my best friends. And this guy is as good a coach as I am, right? And I'm like, I need to continue to grow this and show how good Tino is. And then by surrounding myself with good people, I mean, things are growing because people realize how great Tino is, how great Nicole DeHart is, and they're growing their own communities, and we're all kind of doing it under this umbrella, and we're all supporting each other. And so in the exact same way that we try to foster that with our athletes, we try to foster it with our employees and coaches, is that, you know, I hope Tino pushes me to be better, and I hope he pushes Nicole, and in return, we're all just going to continue to get better and be able to grow together.
So how do you hold it all together? Maybe like what is your general mindset on balancing all of those things? And then even if you could go into maybe the structure of your day or week.
Oh, man. It's tough. I mean, I've got a 2-year-old, my little girl just turned 2 last week, and my son will turn, he's 3.5. He turns 4 just before the CrossFit Games. And, you know, they're still my number one priority. And so it's like, I look and, I would say every day, like, that's the question, is like, hey, how am I there for my kids and my wife, and also making sure that I'm there for my employees and there for my athletes. And it's tough. And the last 2 years have been insane. I would say last year was the hardest of my life, because we also had to, we had to move out of our flagship location, our original location. And, we opened actually 2 new 12,000 square foot gyms, partly out of necessity, you know, not out of design. But so then it was like, I'm trying to hire staff and run 2 gyms and do the family and keep athletes going. And all I could say is that I don't have an easy solution. It's something I struggle with a ton. It's possible because I've got amazing people. If Tino weren't around and weren't, you know, as good a coach as I've ever been, I don't know what would have happened, because he took a lot of these guys under his wing. I mean, he's been Garrett Fisher's coach all year. He's coached a bunch of guys. He's got Christian Harris and Jared Enderton, and I have complete trust in him, and he and I will talk, but, you know, he can run this all. And when Lauren has a question or Maddie has a question, and if I can't be around, they know that Tino's going to give them the exact same answer I would. And so part of it is just having great people around, and part of it is, you know, just being willing to grind and not sleep and make some sacrifices in my own health and fitness to make sure that I can kind of at least balance the highest priorities in my life.
So it sounds like it's just a team effort.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the best way to say it.
Have you ever had any issues with getting people to help with the kind of high level athletes, like fear of someone messing up or fear of you not getting recognition or anything like that?
I think, I think delegation has been something I've been very slow on the uptake for. And I am very protective. And I mean, we've been doing this for years, and Tino's been with me since 2010, and he's been coaching online athletes, but it really wasn't until Tino got back. So he was unable to get a visa, even though he's married to an American. There was about a 18-month process where he was forced to stay in Europe. And once he got back, it was a lot easier for me to turn things over because I have such trust in him. But it's hard for me to trust a bunch of different coaches. It's something I've got to work on as a leader and manager. I look at what James Fitzgerald's done at OPEX, and I think it's incredible. I think he's empowered, you know, I don't know how many coaches they have on their staff. But for me, that's been a struggle to kind of let go of the reins a little bit and let other people take it. Like I said, Nicole and Tino are two people that, Nicole's been an employee with us since 2009. Tino, I've coached and has worked with us since 2010. And so those two are really easy. And the rest is still a little bit of progress for me.
What does continuing education look like for you these days?
I'm big on books. Like I mean, I turned 40 this year. I'm not that old, but I don't know, man. I can't do the internet stuff. Drives me nuts because half the articles I read, I think, are just full of BS, and it seems like as much or more marketing than actual substance. The bold statements, Mike Boyle, who I'm sure is a phenomenal coach, but you know, his like never squat or burpees the worst exercise. I'm like, now we're just saying these things to get our name out, right? Instead of actually giving a thoughtful response on when you would use certain things. And so I'm still big into reading. I like to read different avenues. I think a lot of the track and field stuff is phenomenal for training, just general training. I think Charlie Francis was a incredible coach and really brought some interesting concepts into play. I love weightlifting. We've had some great success with our Olympic weightlifters, and I would say that stuff I try to dig into as much as possible, but mostly older stuff, because I think that there's principles that you can pull from. Mm-hmm. If I don't pull workouts from any of these old Soviet journals, right, but look at like why did they maybe play with certain things and how does it come together, and so I would say continuing education for me is more along those lines. I'll go to seminars occasionally, Ian King, somebody that I think has a lot of smart stuff that we can learn from, but you're going to have to figure out how to apply it. And that's what I see. Sorry, this might be a tangent, but I see in the CrossFit community, I see a lot of people want to play with the thing, and they don't want to do a seminar with somebody who's maybe worked primarily with bodybuilders or who's worked primarily with track athletes, because it doesn't apply to CrossFit, because there has to be that step in there where you're really learning what is the underlying principle, right, and how does that apply to CrossFit, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lack of willingness to do that from a lot of coaches that I think that's too bad, because then I think I see a lot of coaches just staying in the same pool of information over and over. And so I try to break out of that as much as possible. But You know, my more honest answer is I probably learn more from my athletes and from, you know, Nicole and Tino and things that they've read. And then we have conversations about and we say, yeah, maybe we should try that out and let's play with it and experiment a little. And so, you know, I would say there's a ton of that. I spent the first probably 5 years just reading everything I could get my hands on. And now not that I don't constantly learn from things I read, but I'm getting a little more diminishing returns on that. And so I probably learn as much or more from practical experience and then conversations I have with my other coaches and guys like Julian, right? So we brought in Julian Pino a year and a half ago or so, maybe 2 years ago now. And, you know, just getting that different perspective and, you know, we're watching athletes together and we're talking about how to correct things and, it opens up new avenues and then you explore those and tease them out. And, I guess it comes in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. That's all great advice. I really like what you said about, you know, diving into and listening to people in other disciplines, you know, track coaches, bodybuilding coaches, old school strength and conditioning coaches, they've been at it a lot longer than us, right? And they've worked with 10 times as many athletes as us. And like you're saying, we don't have to necessarily pull a workout out of their book, but their the underlying principles, you know, are kind of the same in all sports. And so if we can master those, I think we get a leg up. So not, you know, shutting yourself off to those different avenues is just doing an injustice. So I think that's a great point.
I think it's hard. It's harder, right? Like you have to be able to take the step that goes from this is the workout we gave to then understanding what concept was at play and then creating a workout that you think may work well for the purposes that you are. And I think that's where I don't think any CrossFitter or CrossFit coach is lazy in terms of their ability to work, but I think that sometimes they shut themselves off to having to do that advanced step.
Right. And also it's not, you have to be willing to make some mistakes, right? When you're playing around with these new concepts, absolutely, you're not going to get it right 100% of the time, right off the bat. You're going to make some mistakes. You may give an athlete too much volume, too little volume, too much of something. But you just have to be humble and willing to learn from all of that. That's the only way to get better.
Absolutely. I think if I looked back at programs I wrote, you know, probably even as recently as 3 or 4 years ago, I'd probably cringe. I'd probably be like, oh my God, like why did we do that?
Right. But that's what you got to do. I mean, a lot of people, they just stay in books and they're not willing to step into the unknown and they're not willing to make those mistakes. And that's just what it takes.
Yeah. And that's, you know, yeah, maybe this is just a bitter tangent, but I see that in this industry, it gets really tough because I think there's so many components to this and you can learn and you can research, but if you're not working with athletes, if you're not getting constant feedback, if you're not seeing the athletes move, if you're not watching them recover, man, I don't know how I'd do it if I couldn't walk out of my office right now and see, you know, 20 athletes working out and watch how it actually applies.
Right. My last question for you, what is something that most people don't know about you that you wish they did?
You know, I guess it's just priorities and importance, right? My kids and my family mean the world to me. My mom and dad, you know, work at Invictus. My brother and his wife work at Invictus. You know, my kids are here on the weekends. This is a family business. And I think that, you know, as we've gotten some publicity in terms of competitive success, or we've opened we now have 3 gyms in San Diego and people think, oh, this is a business, like, man, I'm grinding every day. right? My mom and dad came out of retirement to help do things around the business. Wow. And when you walk, you're probably going to meet my sister-in-law. She's going to welcome you in, you know? And so I think those are the things that are really important, is that, you know, we're just like everybody else. We're doing this because we love it, because we love the community. We love being able to help somebody, whether their goal is to lose weight or get strong and compete. And you know, it's everybody here is just bought in on the philosophy, not because we think we can make money or anything like that.
Right. That is so cool, man. Thank you. Is there anything else you want to leave all of these athletes and coaches with?
I don't think so, man. It's, you know, be open-minded and kind, and a lot of good things will happen.
Boom. Love it, man. Where can they keep up with you, find out more about what you've got going on?
Yeah, just at InvictusFitness.com or CrossFitInvictus.com. And I don't even know our Facebook and Instagram. I'm sure it's like CF Invictus. I'm not a big social media guy.
I think
guy.
It's at CrossFit Invictus on Instagram. I don't know about Facebook. Probably just okay. CrossFit Invictus.
Yeah. So all of our, you know, our online programs for people that are outside of the San Diego area, they're all on our website and can be found, you know, with some searching. I'm not much of a web guy either. We probably need to redesign our site a little bit, but and then of course, if you're in San Diego, come by, say hi. Even if CrossFit's not for you, come meet our coaches, figure out if there's any way we can help you.
Thank you so much, man. This has been a great, great chat.
Thanks, Mike. Always enjoy talking to you, buddy.
Appreciate it, man. Have a great day.
Take care.
Yo. Thank all you, right. Man. That was awesome.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. Those are all great questions, man. Hell really yeah, appreciate dude. It.
I'm thrilled. You have a great day, man.
All right, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, bro. Later.
Take care.